Hello and welcome to another episode of Mr. Jeffrion's World History Podcast. This is episode 35. Today's episode deals with the status of states in South Asia, East Asia, Africa, and Latin America following the Great War. Due to the Great War, the political, social, and economic landscape of the entire world shifted. Also, colonies who had helped fight in the war believed they had proven themselves worthy of receiving independence. Across the globe, nationalist and independence movements would take place. While states fought for independence, many, along with their imperial overlords, also experienced a devastating global economic crisis in the form of the Great Depression. All of this makes up an important process in AP World History: decolonization. If you have any questions, please submit them to the show's email at mrjeffrion@gmail.com or the show's Google Voice number 321-804-APWH. Let's begin. As a result of the Great War, India began to search for the freedom they felt they deserved. Indians were educated in European curriculum, including European ways of democracy, equality, and individual rights. Well, if the British administrators only served as policymakers, why couldn't the Indians have true freedom? The Indian National Congress was the first organization to form an effort to petition for freedom. Its goal was to collaborate with the British to find a way to self-rule. Major supporters of the Indian National Congress included both Hindus and Muslims. However, a wedge formed between the two religious groups in 1906, and a splinter group formed. The Muslim League, the aforementioned splinter group, feared that the Indian National Congress would remove British rule only to replace it with Hindu leaders. While it was the intention of the INC to work with the British, change came slowly and conflict began to form between the Indians and the British administrators. As protests formed, the British would try their best to end them before they could gain any traction. This may have worked if it weren't for the two mass movements against the British, led by one man who would come to distinguish himself in the Indian National Congress. Mohandas Gandhi was a Hindu who came from the merchant middle class. He received a European education when he went to London to study and train as a lawyer. Gandhi practiced law in Africa and returned to India in 1915. While he was in Africa, Gandhi came up with an idea now known as passive resistance to authority. Passive resistance means finding a way to fight without violence. Led by Gandhi, Indians boycotted British goods and worked against the British monopoly. The ideas of Gandhi appealed to so many people that they began to refer to him as Mahatma, the Great Soul. The first mass movement conducted against the British would be the Non-Cooperation Movement of 1920, which was a boycott against British goods and focused on using homespun cotton, that is, fabric made in India, as opposed to British-manufactured textiles. Cotton was a major cash crop for Great Britain, and India served as both a source and a market. Indians decided to return to homespun cotton, causing the British to lose money. The second mass movement was the Civil Disobedience Movement of 1930. This movement protested the salt monopoly held by the British. Finally, after years of protest, the British granted the Government of India Act, which established autonomous legislatures, a bicameral National Assembly, as well as an executive under British control. As for the conflict between Muslims and Hindus, Muhammad Ali Jinnah proposed two separate states, one for the Muslims and one for the Hindus. The second state would become present-day Pakistan. The Qing Dynasty, following the Great War, would cease to exist and the Republic of China would arise. A crucial idea to grasp is that although the Republic of China had a president, Sun Yat-sen, the political power was truly controlled by warlords. Warlords would use their private armies to take control of different regions. The overall result would be economic disintegration and political problems. Following examples set by the United States and Europe, the Chinese gained a strong sense of nationalism. They wanted to remove the unequal treaties signed during the Qing Dynasty. To do this, movements like the May 4th Movement would arise, in which mass protests against the presence of the Japanese would occur. Mao Zedong, a former teacher and librarian, looked to Lenin's ideas of Marxism and formed the Chinese Communist Party in 1921. The CCP believed in women's equality and a complete social revolution led by the working class, the proletariat, which in a place like China meant the peasantry. At first, communists agreed with the leadership of Sun Yat-sen's government party. the Kuomintang, the Nationalist People's Party. In fact, the communists made up one-third of the party. When Chiang Kai-shek took leadership of the party following the death of Sun Yat-sen, he sought to unify China under his control and began to purge the party of communists through a series of bloody murders. The communists fled to southeast China to reorganize. While in the long run, China's failure to industrialize in the 19th century under the self-strengthening movement probably did more harm than good, it did mean that China was disconnected from the larger global economy when the Great Depression struck, and was therefore unaffected by the crisis. This is not to say that China was without its challenges. First, as hinted earlier, China was not unified. Between the communists in the south, the remaining warlords, and the ambitious imperialistic Japanese in the north, Chiang Kai-shek had no shortage of enemies. He saw the communist as his biggest threat and went on the offensive. The CCP eluded the nationalists by taking a 6,000-mile journey known as the Long March. Rather than eliminating the communists, the nationalist offensive served to solidify Mao Zedong's leadership and inspired revolutionary fervor among the Chinese peasantry. Another challenge facing China was the rise of Imperial Japan. Japan, being an industrialized state, was affected by the Great Depression. Liberals within the government pushed for social reforms. After an expansion of suffrage to all males in 1925, the conservatives gained traction and began to block further legislation. A series of political assassinations further intimidated opponents as Japan undertook extreme ideas of xenophobia. This ethnocentrism, combined with the economic crisis, led the Japanese to seek growth the only way open to them: military expansion. China, with its state of disunity and vast natural resources, presented a tempting target for Japan, but they needed to justify their invasion to a worldwide audience. To do so, Japanese soldiers dressed as Chinese soldiers and attacked a Japanese rail line in Manchuria. This came to be known as the Mukden Incident and served as an excuse for the Japanese invasion of Manchuria. Citing the failure to prevent Japanese aggression, Chiang Kai-shek's China would be the first to leave the League of Nations. Japan was soon to follow. A precedent of appeasing expansionist states by the League of Nations would continue throughout the 1930s and has come to be seen as a contributing factor to World War II. If you recall from a previous podcast, the thing that made World War I a world war, what made countries who had really no interest in a European war get involved, was colonization. Africans were involved in the war because they volunteered, they were impressed, or they were formally conscripted. Watching the Europeans in the war, the Africans realized something. The Europeans were kind of indestructible. A strong sense of nationalism began to arise throughout African states. They realized that the war was thinning out the European presence in the African colonies, so they began planning armed revolts against the distracted armies. There were multiple reasons for results, including the pan-Islamic opposition to war, the anti-European sentiment, the anti-Christian sentiment, as well as the conscriptions of Africans. At the time, the revolts weren't enough, and the colonial administrators quickly stopped any revolts. World War I would be a changing point for Africa because they began to see themselves equal to the white administrators. They gained a large sense of nationalism, which would inspire their fight for freedom later on. A new African elite class arose, which would inspire new ideas concerning African identities. The African elites used the European concept of the nation-state. Nationalism for Africans was based on ethnicities, religion, and languages from before European colonization. Different ideas arose on how Africa would be organized once they were no longer under European control. People like Marcus Garvey wanted to unify everyone in Africa under one rule. Others wanted to create borders based on the land's geography. Nationalistic ideas were also based on traditional tribal identities. The economies of Africa, of the African colonies, that is, were based on the exportation of raw materials. Consequently, Africa was affected by the Great Depression as the prices for those raw materials plummeted. We are now going to move on to the Latin American struggle with neocolonialism. As you have previously learned, Latin American states gained independence during the 19th century. However, they were still influenced by foreign countries, usually by neocolonialism. Neocolonialism means the economy was dominated by foreign powers and political affairs were often affected by foreign powers. The United States would play a major role in neocolonialism concerning Latin America. The U.S. banks would invest billions of dollars for mineral extraction and oil drilling. The U.S. would use sweetheart treaties to control Latin American economies. In addition, U.S. military forces under the Good Neighbor Policy would train Latin American soldiers. Since the United States was involved in everyday actions of Latin American states, it was quite easy to understand that a cultural exchange would occur. During World War I, Mexicans would migrate to America to work as agricultural and industrial laborers. Hollywood would make productions which would present a positive image of Brazil. World War I, as well as the Great Depression, would be responsible for a reorientation of Latin America's political powers. Marxism, in addition to Lenin's ideas of imperialism, would change the view of many intellectuals. It would be the college students during the 1920s that began to demand reform after hearing about the Mexican and Russian revolutions that would bring the most change. New political parties would arise throughout Latin America. For example, José Carlos Mariátegui in Peru would use Marxism to establish the Socialist Party of Peru. We would have the APRA formed by Victor Raúl Haya de la Torre, which advocated non-communist political rulings. People would find ways to try to influence which political system was the best, as a variety of political systems were considered throughout Latin America. Diego Rivera was a Mexican artist who used his communist beliefs in large murals on public buildings. Well, that wraps up today's episode. Tune in next time. Until then, this has been Mr. Jeffrey On's World History Podcast.